You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality
with Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from downtown Los Angeles in the beautiful, what building is this? The Paul, oh no, we don't want to tell you where we are in case you don't like us and we've made enemies. We're in downtown LA somewhere. We're on every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 Pacific Standard Time. And our show, as you all know, but I'm going to say it again, it's about informative entertainment. And that means that it's our goal to provide you with resource information and tricks of the trade and everything that I can possibly think of to get information about the entertainment business. And that's for those of you who are either living here or living in another state and thinking about coming to LA or New York or wherever you're going to go and pursue a career in entertainment. We want to tell you how to do it economically and on the cheap, on the slide, on the cheap. So hopefully we can do that. That doesn't mean that our guests are cheap, because we have very, very professional people on here to give you this information. And we usually have celebrities at least once a month. We have a celebrity on to give you the real lowdown on what's going on. So we hope that we can help make your dreams a reality in show business. Now, we encourage you to call in about 5:15 to 5:30. We kind of want to introduce the guest to you, get it started, and then you can call in between that time and ask any questions of our guests live. If you find them interesting, we also want you to go to the forum. And if you are listening to us today, the forum page is a link right over top of where you're listening, and it says the forum, and you click on that, just enter your email address and say, hey, I loved your guest today, or I loved your show. Or you can also request a topic or a particular person to come on the show, and hopefully I can beg them to come on. And again, if you like the show, forum, and then also to see guests that are coming on at a later date, you can go to questionreality.us, not .com.us, and it will have all of the guests for the rest of the year. And I'm actually booking now for 2009. We have the top, one of the top award. He's an Emmy Award winner. He's a Clio Award winner. His name is Stuart Stone, and he is coming on. He is like one of the hottest casting directors, film producers, you name it, in the business. He's going to come on in January 11th, I believe, or the 4th. You're going to have to check. I can't remember. But you don't want to miss that show, because he is going to have a lot of tips and advice for you. So we have two people in the studio today besides Albert running the board. We have a co-host, Dan Krause. Say hi, Dan.
Hey, kids.
Dan, as you remember, has been with us before. Was it a couple times or just?
I was only on the show once, and then I called in once.
Okay, yeah. So he was on the show once, I believe, with Kelly Foster. Wasn't that with Kelly?
No, it was a whole hour devoted entirely to me.
Oh, it was a whole hour devoted to Dan. So you might know a little bit about him, but why don't you go to his website anyway when you get a chance. It's, I pray that it's dankrause.net. Is that right?
Alas, no. It's danielkrause.info.
Oh, my goodness. Daniel Krause. You know, because I went to dankrause.net, and it's a really gorgeous site, and I thought that can't be Dan's.
Yeah, no. No, mine is small and squalid.
dankrause.info. So you can go there, and as you know, he is a professional blogger. He blogs about politics and entertainment, and it's so well worth your trip there, because he talks about some interesting stuff, very funny stuff. And he's also a voiceover artist, and he's done a couple of my voiceovers for my advertisers. So you will hear him today when we do the Hard Channel, right? And Design on Dime website. And we have another guest here, which he has many titles. Many titles. Matter of fact, I'm going to take up the rest of the show, and we're going to tell all the titles that he has, okay?
No.
His name is Jason, and I'm going to mess this up, but I'm going to try it. Who is there? who is Steck, and he is, well, to be very short about it, he is a filmmaker and a musician, but he wrote that he's a singer, a songwriter, a producer, a screenwriter, and a director, and he has a number of film projects completed and also in progress, and he is a prominent member of the West Side Renaissance Art Collective, which I am dying to hear about, and he has some notable projects. One of them is the feature film The Curse of Hermit.
Hammett.
Damn, I left an M out when I was typing.
And added an R.
And he has also a self-titled debut album called The Universal Subjective. And we're going to talk to him today. And what I want to talk to him about is how maybe pursuing a career as a musician and a filmmaker, how he survives on a small budget, unless he, as I said earlier, is secretly rich, but how to survive on a small budget and how he finances his projects and just how is he doing it? What's he doing? And so let's announce him now. Hi, Jason.
Hello, Priscilla.
Oh, my God. He has a great radio voice, doesn't he?
So
he
smooth.
He had not said much in the studio, but now I'm listening to his voice over the radio, and he's got a great announcer voice. Okay, Dan, you're out. He's in for next co-host now. Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I know I booked you a long time ago in May, but do you know I cannot remember who referred you? Do you remember?
Yes, Rita.
Rita Obermeyer.
That's right.
How do you know Rita?
We are neighbors.
In Venice.
Yeah.
She's still in Venice.
Yeah.
Isn't she lovely?
She's the best.
I really like her. She's a Scorpio, too. Oh, I'm not into astrology anymore. I try not to bring that up. But she's a really nice, really great actress, too.
Yes.
That was really nice of her. I'm going to have to bring her on the show and give her a little treat. So tell us about yourself. What are you? Now, I went to your website on MySpace. By the way, it's myspace.com, The Universal Subjective. You got that? MySpace.com, The Universal Subjective. And when you go on there, now, I am all about 80s music. Now, he may or may not get mad with me because, I'm sorry, when I went on there and I first heard that song, I believe it's called The Lament of a Dying Keyboard. Is that right?
Yes.
I love that song. I said, oh my God, Albert, you got to come hear it. This is a total 80s song. I love this. Is that kind of 80s style, or I mean, it's beautiful. It really is good.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's like new wave kind of disco.
I loved it. It was so good because I'm all about, you know, I was into New Order and REM and God, every other group back then, and it kind of has that style. And I thought, that's really great. So then I listened to the second one, Rain, because I give songs like 10 seconds. And I know right away if I like it. 10 seconds, that's it. And they're really good. Now, do you write these? Or how many songs have you written total, original songs?
I have no idea, but it's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. So it's so many you wouldn't even know.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Now, that's a good sign. Yeah. That's what the record labels like to hear. Yeah, I have so many, I couldn't even tell you. So do they all follow that same motif of the lament and rain?
No, not really at all. They all kind of tend to vary. That's something I've been, you know, instructed to avoid, but I can't help it.
Oh, yeah. So you've been told to, like, carve out a niche and just stay in that niche?
Right, yeah. But that's a weird thing. You create a lot of different stuff, and different people have opinions of what your best material is, and so you alienate some people every once in a while, but you know, overall.
So you're a true artist rather than a commercial artist.
Well,
that means you're going to do your thing no matter what anyone says, right?
Right.
Even the record label, who's going to pay you hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's like, no.
Ha! Ha! Ha!
Come
how
closer.
How many millions?
So when did you start writing, and when did you first know that you wanted to be a musician?
I think I started writing pretty young, like, I don't know, in the 5 to 8, I would pick up whatever was around, and I never really tried to learn other songs, and I really had instructions. I just kind of tried to figure out chords and progressions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's kind of where I started.
Were you influenced by any bands to kind of get an idea of what you...
Like early on?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the music my brothers would listen to, Sex Pistols, Beastie Boys, like The Clash, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of the hip-hop that was going on then. Fat Boys.
And what would that be, in the early 90s?
That would have been in the 80s. That's the first music I remember.
80s? Oh, you look so young. I can't even imagine.
I'm a 1980 baby. So the formative years.
All
yeah,
right.
I would say my brothers, and then it kind of got into the Jane's Addiction and Sex Pistols. Nirvana and all that stuff.
Okay. So were did you listen to them and kind of think that you wanted to be in that genre of writing, or did you want to go into your own thing?
Well, that early, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Actually, most of my music came out really weird, and it was just, I don't know what kind of music
that was. Well, at five, I can't imagine what you wrote.
Well, I don't think I started recording.
Were they jingles for television?
No, they were really bizarre. I don't know. I started making little films back then, too, so I don't know. I guess it all goes back to...
Wow, that's what George Lucas did. You are a true artist. So you made little films? What little films did you make? What were they about?
Well, I'd shoot it all in camera. I'd edit in camera. I'd play all the parts most of the time, unless I could get a friend. I had this one that was... I don't think I had a name for it, but it was like a slasher film, I'd say. Someone gets killed with a cheese grater.
Interesting. And you wrote that and thought all about it and everything, huh? Cheese grater. Okay, open the door, Dan.
No.
I need to make a quick exit. We don't really know Jason. I told you it was my first time.
Don't worry. Use the cheese grater. It takes hours.
Oh, okay.
Well, that was kind of the bit. Like, he sneaks in the house and ruffles through the drawers, and that's like the best thing you find. There was hamburger meat and ketchup involved. It was fairly gory.
That's a good point. It's a cheese grater. It would take hours,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, so you made these little films, and then what did you do? What did you do growing up? Did you...
Well, I should say, once I actually started getting bands and that kind of thing, you were young, and playing things fast seemed like the right thing to do. So we were kind of, we were punkers for a couple of years. And we got a lot of gigs doing that,
Mm-hmm.
When you're young and angry, seems like the right thing to do.
Weren't you in a band, Dan, when you were young and angry?
No.
Were you ever young and angry?
I was never angry.
Oh, you were... Well, you don't have to be young and angry to be in a band. Can't you be happy and plucky?
Yeah, I suppose so, but then you're in Katrina and the Wave.
Oh, that's right. We're walking on sunshine.
Sure, yeah.
You know that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Nobody wants that. That's my point.
Oh, what about Walk Like an Egyptian? Who was that? Suzanne and the...
It was the Bangles.
The Bangles.
Yeah.
Well, that's happy music.
Yeah, that's true. Although they were a little angry here and there. Now and then, they'd go a little angry on you.
They're just angry off stage.
They're just...
psychotic off stage, rather.
The second the lights went out, they'd go straight to each other's eyes. Just like, yeah.
Wait, do you ever write happy music?
Yeah, I think so. I think I do now, yeah. I don't think I'm all that angry these days.
When did the anger start?
I don't know. Statistically, when's it end? I think probably 19 or so.
Oh, that's usually when people are just getting angry. So
really?
You had an early anger stage.
Yeah, I peaked early.
Oh, you peaked.
It was good of you to burn it all off then, yeah.
Right.
That was very smart.
So were you in a band that played professionally, like you and your little mates?
Yeah, we'd get paid every once in a while, but, mainly it was like keg parties, constant.
Oh, we have a call. Somebody wants to talk to Jason Stack. I love that middle name. Oh, you are
Hello.
Hi, you're online. Do you want to talk to Jason?
Yeah, guys, it's Kelly.
Oh, Kelly,
how
hi.
Are you doing?
Hey, Kelly.
You're a great co-host, Dan. I'm shaking in my shoes. But anyway, Jason, I just listened to your website, your music on your website, and it's fantastic. And I was wondering, you've written so many songs. How do you decide what songs to put on an album?
Well, I guess it just has to do with how current it stays in your mind, I guess. I'm a proponent of not writing down lyrics or writing down chord changes or anything like that. I just, if they stick around, they stick around. If they don't, they don't.
Oh, okay. Well, I really like all the... It's interesting, the four that were on your website, they did have some sort of, a thread. Even though they're all different, they had a similar, vibe between them, which I always admire. So congratulations, and I really like your music a lot.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you think that, because I wonder sometimes if it seems all over the place. But thank you for saying so.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, guys. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kelly.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. Now, that is interesting what you said. What did you say? You don't remember the lyrics or the chords?
I don't write them
down. What the hell is that all about? I don't even know what that means. How do you get it? You know, how do you get a song completed if you don't remember that?
Well, I just don't write them down. Like, if I do, I feel like I'm rushing them. If they kind of come into my mind, they stay in my mind, then they seem more significant, I would say.
So it's kind of a test. It's kind of a gateway for you.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes I move very rapidly, too. Sometimes I write and record and produce a song like in one sitting, which would be the the opposite of that. But
wow.
But most of the albums come from about maybe a year of writing.
That is so fascinating, because just think if something happened, like there was, God forbid, a fire, and you lost everything, and then you got knocked on the head by a wooden beam. You wouldn't remember any of your songs, and you wouldn't have any record of them.
But I'd have a song I could write about being hit on the head with a beam and having my house burned down.
Hey, that's right. Then that takes us back to the angry stage, though. Damn, we didn't want that. But that I have never. Have you guys as musicians? Because Albert is a guitarist, bassist, and Dan, I think you sing.
I sing.
Have you ever heard of that? That is such a fascinating way to be an artist, to not write it down and just be able to do it.
I've heard of an opposite thing. There's a woman named Melody Gardot who went into music because she had this terrible, horrendous bicycle accident about 5 years ago. And she suffered from nerve damage and short-term memory loss. And she literally cannot write a song for longer than 20 minutes before she forgets what the song was about.
Wow.
Yeah, and when she's performing, she can go by muscle memory for a while, but if she forgets or she's distracted in the middle of the song, she literally has to run through the whole thing in her head, until she catches up with the point where she was singing before.
Wow.
I just thought I'd throw that in. Really.
Thank you for throwing that in. That is, well, we would hope that she would take frequent breaks.
Yeah, that one would think. She's really good, too.
Yeah.
Are you, by the way?
What does she sing?
It's sort of a bluesy, kind of jazzy kind of thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm actually fascinated to hear some of this work that has no record anywhere other than Jason's mind. So, I want everybody else to. He did, but I'm saying, what if there was an earthquake and then a hurricane?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
What if there was nothing left? I just wonder what would happen.
Be around to listen to it.
That's true. You know, if the Large Hadron Collider causes that black hole and we're all sucked into that, it's kind
true.
Of a moot point anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have something written down somewhere. I'm not having it today, Jason. There's something written down.
Well, yeah.
We're going to find out where he lives and when he's working. We're raiding the place and looking for some lyrics. But let's listen to a couple of songs. Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about these songs?
Okay. I believe this is Unhappy in Love, the first song, which would be another tangent from the 80s thing. This is country, I'd say. This is country or alt country. So
country? Now, you didn't tell us. I guess I assumed it was all that, 80s kind. You do country, too.
That's what you get for assuming. Wow. So.
It's true. We're going to hear some country now. Now, what's the first one called?
Unhappy in Love.
Oh, Unhappy in Love. Okay, so this is Jason Hughes Steck. And I'm going to just call him Jason Steck in Unhappy in Love whenever it comes on.
Down by the seashore, she was found. Seashore where she was found, down by the seashore she was found, down by the seashore where she drowned. So ghost on this beach, or so I've heard. The song grows old. She wanders around, borders held.
Wow, Jason.
That's actually not the country
song. That's not the country song.
Yeah, that sounded more Pink Floyd-y.
Yeah. So what happened to the country song? Is that on there?
That's a different song, apparently.
Okay, maybe we're going to get to that a little later. So tell us about that, Down by the Seashore. Is that to a young lady?
It's to a very young lady.
Oh, God, this is a whole new show.
We were driving, me and my girlfriend were driving up the coast on the one, and we stopped for a bit, and we hiked down to the seashore, this big cliff bluff, and there was this amazing gravesite, and the girl's name was Annabelle. And so I wrote a song to her. She was 5 years old when she died in like the 1800s. It was really touching, though. She was buried next to her father and her brother, and it was on this beautiful bluff, you know, on the Northern California coast. It was
right.
It was really special and eerie.
Did they die at the same time? Did you notice the dates?
No, they didn't die. Yeah, everyone outlived the daughter. I mean, you know, she died when she was five.
Oh,
so.
God. Oh, that. I bet there's a whole story there.
Yeah.
I had to make it up as I went along. But
basically, of course, that's what you do. I like it. Well, that, you know, so I get the impression that if you saw a painting, like if you looked at that painting and that moved you, that you could just whip out a song right here live.
Maybe not that painting, but other paintings, perhaps.
So you can do that. That is a true artist, don't you think, Dan?
Yeah.
I mean, that is, you can't do that. I have friends who are musicians who have to have, they're very organized and detail-oriented, and they have to have a clean surface, and then they got to have their Starbucks coffee, and then they have to have their pencil sharpened, and then they have to do the 3-3, and the, I'm not a musician, but, you know, the, what is that, Albert, that they have to make sure that the
time
song, yeah, the time is this and that, and then they'll go over it and over and over, and they're very meticulous about it.
I'm actually sort of like that, though. When I get to the recording process, I'm definitely like,
okay.
Oh, you have to be then.
But that would require pencil and paper. And that means you would have to write.
You're just trying to poke holes in that story, aren't you?
I'm just teasing him. I'm just seeing if he can go with the flow, right? I'm just teasing him. But, so it sounds like you're a real true artist. Now, what if your music, now, what are you trying to do with your music? Are you using some of your music as soundtracks on your film? Because I know you also do films.
I try and score specifically to that, you know, and use a kind of a different approach to it than the pop, I'd say, approach.
But. You use the word score. Now, are you able to write music? Are you a lyricist as well as a composer?
Yeah.
So you can read and write music.
I can, but to be honest with you, I find it to be a real pain. It annoys me.
It does. Oh.
Yeah. Like, I had piano lessons.
Oh, yeah, because that requires writing. I got it. Never mind, Jason. That was stupid of me. Right? But, yeah, I can see that. It's a very tedious process, I would imagine, right?
Well, I had a piano lessons in college, and I really tried to do, you know, to read as I played, you know, so that I'd actually learn something new. And I imagine my teacher thought I was, like, you know, a third level, or, you know, third grade level competency. And then, you know, the thesis or whatever was to memorize a piece, and so she tripped out when she heard me actually play from the top of my head, and then that's, you know.
So you're also a filmmaker. Now, when you say filmmaker, what do? Do you produce,
I write and direct.
And what type of movies do you write and produce? Like, for example, this one, The Curse of Hermit.
Hammett.
It was Hermit!
I misspelled it.
Okay, we got a
Hammett. Hammett, it is. I thought it was some puppet movie. I'm like, okay, The Curse of Hermit. I can talk about that. I watched it. What is that about?
I would say that's about, you know, quasi about the young angry days, I guess. It's although it's, you know, not explicitly autobiographical. Mm-hmm. It has elements of funny things that happen, but it's I like to call it a metaphysical teen romp.
Huh. I love those.
Physical team. You did those. Hemet, isn't that a place in California? Are you referring to a place in California, the Curse of Hemet?
Yes, it's a place relatively close to here. It's inland, part of the Inland Empire. It's a place that I grew up in.
I understand.
It's a fairly uneventful place.
Suburban, right?
Basically it was really rural when I grew up, and it's had, you know, it went from a town of like 30,000 to maybe 100,000 in the last 15 years, and so it's this kind of track home madness, and I don't know, the kind of had this rural decay thing going for it before all that, and it's you know, it's mm-hmm. it's somewhat about that as well.
But. So what takes place in the film, and what did you do it just because, again, you maybe just got bored and decided to write it, or did you write it for a purpose?
Yeah, I think it probably has a purpose, but it's mainly, I would say, consequence based. You know, it's not beating any kind of moral or anything mm-hmm. to it. I would say it's kind of existential, if mm-hmm. anything. It's kind of the young boy. He's a blank canvas, and he kind of gets introduced to the paradigms of education and religion and et cetera, et cetera. And then he kind of makes choices that based somewhat on what he has learned and
him it.
Yeah, and the consequences are tragic.
Oh, excellent.
Wow. Never heard of any of those stories coming from Hemet, so we got to watch that. Now, where would we see this movie, The Curse of Hemet?
It's still in post, but there's a trailer on YouTube, so you just go to YouTube, punch in the Curse of Hemet, and you'll kind of get a gist of the tone, I think.
Hemet, okay. How is that spelled exactly?
H-E-M-E-T.
That's a very good question, Dan. I was going to ask that because not everybody's from California. They don't know where Hemet is.
In fact, no one from LA knows where Hemet is. It's like an hour and a half from here, and no one's ever heard it.
I've heard it. I have heard when I first came to California, I ran into this girl who liked to smoke weed, and she said, "I'm going to Hemet."
It is kind of famous
because they
for that.
Got the best weed.
Notoriously bad weed.
Homegrown, I hear.
Yeah, which the movie touches on.
Ah, yeah, and I said Hemet. Oh, so now I'm forever associating Hemet as like this big marijuana growing town with like cornfields of marijuana stalks.
It's somewhat true. Yeah, I mean, you go out there and there's acres and acres of places that are not patrolled by police the way it is here, and you definitely can get away with it. As well as it's like it's close to one of the meth capitals as well. So.
Oh, what's the meth capital called?
Anza. This is what we always heard. I don't know if that's urban folklore, but
we're going to have a mass exodus of people coming to Hemet and Anza.
Wow, so, I can see the freeway from here. The Thames just going.
Everybody from Padunk. So it's in post production now. What do you want to do, or what are you going to do with that film once it's completed?
Watch it.
Watch it.
Show it and watch it.
Now, do you have any kind of commercial interest in taking your art to that level?
I think, I think in general artists probably do.
They really, even though they say that they just want to make it to do it just because they feel it coming on and they have to indulge themselves, do they really have a secret agenda of wanting to become rich and famous and the next Bobby Brown and Whitney Houston?
Well, I think if the genesis comes from anywhere else than wanting or having to make the art, then I think that you may be doing it just for the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
But an audience is historically, I'd say, fairly significant for people who make art.
Right.
I mean, I don't think you can separate the two.
Some people actually do make it just for themselves. Like, Dan, you blog, right? And you don't care who the hell, listens to your stuff. You just do it to, do it for the art, right?
Yeah, although I got to say, it's a big waste of time. It does make a lot more sense to, if you're going to be doing this stuff anyway, it makes sense to actually try to get a living out of it.
That's true. You would want to get paid for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. If for no other reason that it clears up all that time that you spend actually making a living so you can do your art.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. Yeah. I think it's extremely important to get also paid for it is that you're interested in.
Right. And hopefully people will like it enough to pay. So you're in post-production. When do you expect this film to be completed?
Probably by fall. We're kind of doing it all by ourselves. And
when you say we, who are the other team members?
Me, my brother, some of the West Side people.
Some West Side people.
Collective.
The West Side Collective.
It's part of the Universal Subjective Collective.
That's right.
And what are you going to do with it? Are you going to actually shop it at festivals?
Yeah, festivals, and try and sell it to the distributor, I imagine.
Fantastic. And who's going to spearhead that project? Would that be you?
Me and my minions.
You and minions.
Good for you for having minions.
Yeah, I mean, I want minions too.
Well, you do have minions.
I do have minions. Yeah. I do have some minions. Now, you say you also have some other things going on. What else do you have going on?
I'm working on some shorts. You know, those are kind of in pre-production, but that'd be something I'm also doing with this art collective I'm with.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have some feature coming up.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Thanks for bringing that up. You are with, what is it called, West Side
Renaissance.
What do they do? I've never heard of them. Have you, Dan?
No, actually.
No.
It's a small production company, but, you know, they're kind of varied, which is a cool thing. They have commercials that they do, like we do a lot of toy commercials, et cetera, mm-hmm. a lot of, well, no, random stuff, but also documentaries. They're very green-oriented. They're really focused on that and mm-hmm. have a few docs out in that vein. And they're out in Greece shooting something right now, and we're working on a feature coming up for this year. So,
do they have a website?
WSRCreative.com.
WSRCreative.com.
Yes.
WSR. Well, that would make sense. West Side Renaissance.
Yeah. West Side.
West Side. What's up? What's up? WestsideCreative.com. And so go there and check them out. I'm glad I'm recording this because I wanted to check it out and I don't have that website address. So what else? So now do you feel that you are going to be successful based on the path that you've taken? Or do you really just not give a damn?
No, I give a damn. I think that persistence is a factor in those type of things. So, like I said, you know, if I was doing this when I was 5 and I'm still obsessed with it and don't really have any other interests, then I can only assume that there's some kind of purpose to that. Mm-hmm. You know, if there isn't, you know, I guess, you know, whatever.
Did you have a lot of resistance from your family, as most of us do when we tell them we want to pursue a career in entertainment?
A little resistance probably would have helped. The answer is no. My family were all
you know,
artists. Yeah, my dad was a writer and producer, and my mom was a dancer. And no, they've given me absolutely no resistance.
Wow. Yeah. So that this is the first time I've ever talked to anyone who has not had resistance from their family. Do you feel that has helped you to explore your creativity at a deeper level without the resistance? And have they also financially supported you because they agree with your path?
I think financially they kind of let me do it. I don't know if they're going to get mad at me because they obviously supported me, you know, as mm-hmm. parents and all that. But they kind of let me pay for my own stuff because I think that it was another kind of test for whether I was really into it or not, you know.
Right.
So, like, they bought me my first drum set. I took that back. But, you know, constantly.
You remember that so long ago.
Yeah, it was significant, you know. But, I don't know. Yeah, you always hear these people overcoming diversity and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my parents threw me out.
Right.
And all that stuff. No, that wasn't the case.
Yeah, it's interesting.
They'd take me back now if I asked. So.
Yeah, usually though, artists have to, get galvanized by the resistance from their parents. You kind of had to galvanize yourself.
Yeah, that's true. And I suppose the rest of society is trying to galvanize you anyways. I mean, it's not like they, you know, let you come through the back door with all this stuff.
Yeah, true.
I don't know where I can go with this. He has no hard luck or trauma stories from my audience. There are no trials or tribulations to speak of. What can you tell my audience now? What are we going to talk about? You have no hard luck stories about the family beating you down and trying to get you to be a lawyer or a doctor. What can you tell the people? I guess maybe there's someone else like him where the family is an artist. I'm sure there are people, and they're letting their children do their thing. What would you suggest to people like that?
Well, I would say the same. The game plan's the same either way. I mean, it's really about whether you're actually interested in this or not, if you're not just kind of
feigning. How do you really know if you're interested? I mean, kids go through so many phases. Teenagers go through phases. Adults go through phases. And it's not only a familial input, but it's also peers and it's things that you read and see. How do you know if that's really something that you want to do? You can think that you're good at it, but you may not be good at it.
I think the phase signifies it. I mean, to put it any other way, I don't know. I mean, I think that if it is a phase, then that's your answer right
but
there.
But how do you distinguish whether you should be doing it as a career or a hobby? Because honestly, a lot of people think they're the best singer, and they are not. And a lot of people think they're the best musician on an instrument, and they are not. And they spend a lot of money going to schools, and they... And people just, I don't know, people aren't honest a lot of times, and they say, oh, yeah, you're great. They sugarcoat it, and they're not. How do you feel that, a person should approach their career in art and be honest with themselves?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure I can answer it because, I don't know that. I mean, whenever someone tells me they think I'm good, I just think, well, they must not know very much. No offense to anybody. So I don't know. I think there's just something in you that keeps chugging along. I think that if you follow it, then that's the real deal. And if something tells you to quit, I mean, there's other things that are more important in life anyways. There's families and there's careers, and everyone in this universe like pulls their weight. So, whatever your life ends up being, I think that's great. But, if you feel it burning in you, then my suggestion is just, stick with it until you get good. I mean, you may not be good. People might be telling you you're good. I mean, the Coens said it, I was reading this interview and it was talking about they got these Academy Awards and all these things. And they say, why do you attribute that? What do you attribute that to? And they said, because we never stopped doing it, I mean, I think that's the answer. I think that if you're an artist, it's because you created art. If you're not an artist, it's because you didn't create art. And I think that's just I think that's the end all answer.
And people are going to like it. And some people are going to like it and some people are not. Like, there have been people, I know you guys have experienced too, where your friends say, oh my God, you got to hear this band. They are so awesome. They rock. Oh my God. Oh my God. And you hear them and you are so not into them. You just don't. So there are going to be people that like you, and then there are going to be people who don't like you. So I guess as long as you can put bread and butter on the table, keep at it. But if it comes down to choosing, maybe if you have to choose between having, you got some girl pregnant and you have to support her, then you're going to have to get a day job. So maybe you can work both, but maybe you can't. And then Jason may write a song about it.
The great thing about the music industry right now is that if you have material that, say, only 200 people in the whole world like, you can get to those 200 people. You can make money off of those 200 people, and like 10 or 15 years ago, you had to, first of all, attract the attention of a guy who runs Clear Channel, right, and get him to like you, and then have him present you to everybody else in the world. Now, the guy from Clear Channel is kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, I agree. I think that everyone should just find their audience and just do what they do, and there's people out there, there's some strange, sick people out there. So,
yeah.
No matter what you're into, if it's flagellating puppies or whatever, you're going to find an audience.
I've seen that guy. He's not so bad.
Now, are you running, say, with the crowd that is going to take you to the next level, whatever that may be? Are you into the whole networking connection sort of thing? Do you feel that that's vital or...
It is vital. You have to be visible. You have to have your stuff together. Do I pursue it like it's part of the job? Not probably the way I should. I feel that those things are kind of like a girlfriend, They happen organically. I mean, you go out and look for one, you come off like a cheese ball. you wait around and you have your stuff together. You find somebody,
Hey, baby, you want to hear my songs?
So you don't go finding out where the people are and just suddenly appear.
I probably shouldn't, actually, and it's funny because when I do run into people, I very seldom plug myself or tell them what I'm all about. But.
Oh my God, I have so many friends that do that. They like I have a friend that knows every Thursday night in New York. This person is an aspiring, not aspiring because he has some reputable work behind him, but he's so goal-oriented. I just turned him on to every Thursday night in New York at the Port Authority. They have all the Broadway stars, the producers, the directors, anyone who's anyone in Broadway. They go and play, they bowl every Thursday night. So I told him, and he's like, gearing up, he's going out and buying his own bowling ball and a pair of bowling shoes, and he's going to just suddenly show up, right? But he is so all about the networking and the promoting himself, and you really do. I mean, it's great to be an artist, but I personally think you do have to have some, because when it gets down to it, you are a business, and you do have to have some networking, marketing skills. I mean, it's all about getting your stuff out there, and you have to do that. So how do you feel about that? Do you feel that you you want to do that more?
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. I just think that some people, maybe their personalities are set up in different ways, you know, and if you're not one of those people that's good at that, that you should find somebody that's interested and supports you.
Give them a cut.
That is true. Because I have found so many musicians that are so good and they're shy. You know, they don't really have that networking type personality and they really can't sell themselves. So they just sit back and it's such a shame because there are so many people that are never going to be discovered.
Right.
And their voice will never be heard because they don't have that ability to do that.
Right. Well, I think artists are kind of vulnerable when they put themselves out there like that. So I think it is better that they're not in the room, to be honest with you. I think more can be done, you know. I mean, if you don't have the resources to do that, and there's plenty of go-getter, mm-hmm. you know, artists and so forth, but, you know, I would say...
Do you feel like the people who have made it and have been extremely successful and have constantly reinvented themselves, do you think that that's because they are a large part of that or that they have people behind them?
It's always about having the people behind you. Mm-hmm. You know, none of these people do anything by themselves. So
mm-hmm.
they all have producers and, you know, engineers and so forth.
So what advice would you give to an audience of how they could get, if they don't have the personality, how can you get someone behind you and believe in yourself to help you promote and network yourself?
Find them, and I, you know, hopefully it's Kismet as well. You know, I'm actually working with this young guy right now and producing him, and I think it was kind of the same way. You know, you can go to a lot of clubs in Hollywood and, you know, kind of sneer out the side of your face about the bands mm-hmm. and stuff. And I met this guy through a friend, and I think he's a genius. And you know, I for him, I find it's like easier to, you know, go approach radio station or et cetera, than it is for my own stuff, you know,
right, yeah.
Because it's not, I mean, it's not like, check me out, you know,
right.
I mean, I just,
right.
I don't know, that always comes off wrong in my brain anyways, but,
uh-huh.
but when you're supporting someone else, I think that you can, you know, have more, I guess, righteous.
Right, yeah. That's interesting, because I don't see you as the type to be hanging out waiting for the people to come and saying, hey, my CD,
right.
Oh, check me out. I don't see you as that type of person. I do see you as more of a behind-the-scenes kind of, you know, guy, or helping someone else. That's what I sense about you.
Yeah.
And I think that that's going to be something that you probably are going to end up doing more as a career, being the producer, director
mm-hmm.
Of songs as well as music.
Right.
I mean, a film.
Right.
That's what my psychic vibe is telling me. I got the psychic thing going on. But you're just such a great performer. So do you perform where we can see you? Is there anything coming up that we can see you perform?
Nothing specifically, actually. I just got a live group together. I don't know. I don't think I mentioned it, but all the album tracks, it's me playing all the instruments and stuff.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Is that with that band in the box thing? Or
No, I just play all the instruments. I mean, I play drums, I play bass and keyboards and et cetera, whatever's on there.
But that brings up an interesting question. It's kind of crass to ask, but how much did it cost you to put together the studio?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot, and it took a lot of years. You know, like I said, I don't.
What did you
money.
Do for income?
I would say that I paid for all this equipment by bartending, waiting tables, working at like places like Guitar Center, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. The classics. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I just built it up over the years, you know.
Now, are you still doing that? You still have the, quote, day job to supplement your craft?
No, finally, I actually work in the production house, WSR. So.
Oh, they pay you?
Well, yeah.
Wow, that's great.
So. It's cool. It's a cool position because I can, you know, I can operate camera or can do some After Effects stuff or, you know.
And that's very important, at least if you can get into a company where you're still working on something that's in your realm, your art. Right, Dan? I mean,
right, yeah.
Try to do that. Work for something. Don't, you know, waiting tables, it's just so cliche and typical. But, you know, it's perfect if you are pursuing a career in music or... as an actor, or what else, mate? What else do you get while you're playing?
You can also eventually park cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do that, but you don't have to do that. There are so many other jobs. You know, there you can be work for an answering service, or you can be a caddy,
right.
Or what are some other jobs? There's
well,
so many great jobs. You got to think outside the box.
Just
so,
any job where the
schedules are flexible enough that you can take time off at a moment's notice to do an audition.
And in California, in Southern California, everybody knows that the artist is wanting to go on an audition or do something. So they're pretty flexible in most jobs. Yeah. So you are going to have to let us know about the band because we want to come in and see you.
Yeah, definitely. We just started rehearsals and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
Because I haven't played a gig since my last band.
Okay. So how would we find out about that? Are you updating that website?
Yeah, it'd be on the MySpace page.
It will be.
Yeah,
okay.
And it should be pretty soon. We're working through the material pretty fast. So.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that was Jason Juez. Say it, please. Juez Steck, and he is just an artist. He's just doing his thing, and he's going to continue doing his thing, and hopefully we're going to hear him sing live. I really want to come see you sing live.
Okay.
So send me an email if you remember, and you can check him out on myspace.com/theuniversalsubjective. Yeah, is that right? Subjective?
That's quite correct, yes.
Thank you so much. And we hope that he was helpful to you if you're pursuing a career. We hope that you got a lot of information out of that. If not, at least you know where to go to get some marijuana. That's Hemet. And we have 4 minutes left, and I want to talk to Dan because, oh my God, well, first I want, and you know, Jason, please, you can feel free, but I discovered I was watching the Margaret Cho show, and there was a song that came on, and I just know, 5 seconds or less, I know if I'm going to like the song, and I heard this song, and I went crazy. I said, oh my God, I have to have this song. Oh God, 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 and thank God they chose a section that had the title. And I had Albert look it up, and I said, I can't believe I missed that band in the 80s. It's called The Killing Time, or The Killing Moon.
Oh, wait, you know, that's not the band, though. That's the song.
That's the song, but the band is... Oh. That's my test question for you.
Damn.
The Killing Time.
Echo and the Bunnymen, if I'm not mistaken.
Damn you! I knew he was going to get it! There is nothing that gets past him as far as music.
Come on,
I thought
Echo,
for sure I was going to trick you into that.
Sorry.
That is just amazing. But yeah, they're a great, great band.
Yeah, I love those guys.
Echo and the Bunnymen.
Right.
It is and the Killing... Is it the Killing Time or the Killing Moon?
The Killing Time, but I didn't know that.
I love them. They rock. I mean, and they do a lot of that techno stuff like you do, Jason. So you should check them out. Do you know that band?
Yeah.
Oh, you do? Am I the only one who didn't know them? Now, I want to talk real quick. We got a couple minutes, but I wanted to get those blogs in. Where can people read your blogs? Because they're so good. And I'm talking specifically about these ones that... Ooh, what are the ones that I brought up earlier?
Well, you mentioned...
The one about the subatomic fusion.
Yeah, right. Okay, so...
Oh, he wrote this one. It's called The Subatomic Fusion and Gene Splicing of Figaro.
Yeah, see...
real quick, in 3 minutes, tell us about that, because you just went to see The Fly.
Right, exactly.
You hated it. You didn't like it.
I drove into L.A., and I did hate it. It was at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and... They have done an opera based on The Fly, you know, the Jeff Goldblum movie from the 80s. And it's directed by the same guy who directed the movie. It's scored by the same guy who scored the movie. And it just completely doesn't work in all the ways that the movie did work.
I know.
Yeah, it's so strange. I think I know what happened, too, because they went with all atonal modern classical for the score. And it's you kind of need it to be lush and orchestral and human for the first part before he starts going all fly-y on you.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was Huang, right? Isn't Huang
David Henry Huang, the librettist, who also wrote M. Butterfly,
right.
Which was made into a movie by David Cronenberg.
Yeah. So it's a little click going on.
Yeah, those guys just hang out together.
I nearly died when you said that like 5% of the people didn't come back after intermission.
Oh, yeah, we were able to get great seats after intermission.
That's unheard of at the L.A. Opera. I have never heard of that.
People did not like that fly.
Wow, I wanted to see it. I'm really upset about that.
Well, you still can.
Oh, is it still going on?
Yeah, it's still got like another couple of weeks, and I think tickets are available.
Well, you got to check his blog out. Where can people see that blog? Because that is so funny.
I'll just give you the big hub site, which is danielkraus.info. That links to everything.
Is that the one where it's plain white with that text?
Yeah, exactly.
I hate that site. Please redo that. Please.
All right, I'll put it in a green.
But he does cover everything on there. So thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. Carrie Cavalier is running a special, by the way. Cavalier Photography, $150 for headshots if you say Priscilla sent you. Have a great, 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 great week, and we'll see you next time.
Do you need a website but don't think that you can afford one? Do you dread the thought of even doing the research to find a company that you can afford? Do you cringe because you know that the person you talk to will try to sell you more than the advertised price? At Design on a Dime websites, we pride ourselves in being able to design original, professional, efficient, creative, and extremely affordable websites. Your website design will load fast, be customized to fit your needs and vision, and be presented in a clear, concise, and easy-to-read format with user-friendly link navigation. We challenge you to find a company that has lower prices and better customer service with beautiful, original designs. So, gather some dimes together and call us today at 213-687-6903 or visit us on the web at designonadime.us for your personal consultation with a very friendly representative who will be able to give you a great website that fits your budget.